Hello and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the shows that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my partner in podcasting, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And this episode, we are looking back at Spats, which I had completely forgotten existed until...
Yeah, every now and again it pops into my head, and I don't know why. And it's been on our list for a while. There are a couple of... Because this was an ITV show, it was a Thames, co-production with Canadians in the first season, and then it became solely Thames after season two. But yeah, this always pops into my head every now and again. Every now and again, I just get visions of the little dude tap dancing on the fucking burger. And the theme tune. So yeah, it was one of those. It's been on this for a while. And yeah, it's about time we really sort of dived into it.
Yeah, I think we put it on a little while ago, yeah, when we were just searching for some more shows, I think. We wanted to like bulk the lists up. And I found some sort of list of forgotten shows somewhere. And this was one that I threw on the list. And I'd forgotten about it before I saw it on that list. And then I forgot about it again until we came to sort of put this month's schedule together. And I don't know why, because I did like it quite a lot as a kid. I remember really liking this. And I could remember a lot about it every time I thought about it. But then it just kind of goes away. And I don't think about it again.
It's kind of like pink candy floss. It's just fluff.
Yeah.
It doesn't really... I mean, I remember really liking it as well. But yeah, it's one of those that it's just... It's never a Transformers. It's never a He-Man. It's never the zeitgeist of anything. It's never going to be the forefront of your mind.
No.
But when you think about it, it just... It's there.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, watching this these last few weeks has been the one and only time in, I don't know what, 6 or 7 years of doing this show now? Maybe more?
Yeah.
The only time my wife has shown even a modicum of interest, like even a gnat's pube of interest in anything we're doing, just because like I couldn't find this anywhere, so I had to resort to YouTube. Yeah. More on that in a bit. But then obviously it's popping up on my playlist. Now, we watch a lot of YouTube in this house. We're big Disney people, as lots of regular listeners know. I watch a lot of vloggers. So, like, we're sad enough that that's our general weekend viewing, is we'll watch Disney vloggers, right? We'll sit down on Saturday night, open a beer, and watch hours and hours of vlogs. But it's just, so we did that this weekend, and all of a sudden, Spats is there. And she just perked up straight away. She's like, oh my God, it's Spats. I remember Spats. I'm like, you motherfucker! Like all the shows that we've done,
that you could
happens regularly. You know, whenever we have to resort to YouTube, which we try and avoid, you know, as we always say, always pay for your content, but sometimes you just have to. But like the stuff that, like the real, like heavy hitters that have cropped up on YouTube, but no fucking Spats. Apparently, that's the one. So, yeah, but I think it's like we were saying, it's like she hadn't thought about it in years, but she remembered everything about it instantly because she loved it as a kid. Weird how it has evokes that response, because it was certainly the same for me. It was like, I don't think about this show on the daily, monthly, or even yearly like I do with some of these other shows, but I knew a hell of a lot about it once I started watching it again.
Yeah, no, we had a very similar thing. So I picked this up probably Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Tuesday night, a couple of days ago. So I watched most of the first season, and then Tori asked what we were doing this week. And I said, oh, it's Spats. And she said, oh, what's that? And I said, it's the one in the fast food restaurant where they've got the garish pink uniforms. And as soon as I said that, she was tuned straight in. She knew exactly what it was. And again, she could remember certain things about it. She could remember certain people who were in it. And yeah, it was just one of those, as I said, it's just there. It's like the fucking... Red Car and the Blue Car had a race. All the fucking lyrics were in there somewhere.
Oh, man. Yeah. Let's get on to that. Let's get sidetracked straight away, right? Because I've got quite a bit to say about this show, actually. So I feel like we may as well just get on the sidetrack straight away, because you've mentioned the Red Car and the Blue Car now as well. I'm assuming you've had to resort to YouTube as well, because fuck me, I could not find this anywhere.
Couldn't
I wish I could.
Couldn't find it any fucking way.
Because I'll be honest, not to bury the lead here, I'll happily spend some money for a box set of this if I can find it.
There's only 30 episodes or 33 episodes. I'd quite happily spunk a couple of quid on this.
Easily.
I had a tax rebate last week as well, so I'm fucking there.
There you go, right? But I've had to resort to YouTube. Now, whoever is doing the Lord's work and putting this on YouTube has gone a step further because they actually get the pre-roll intro from CITV, then the adverts, then the show, and the outro as well. So it was a huge nostalgia bomb watching this.
Yeah. I to be honest, I at one point I was quite happy just to watch the fucking adverts.
Oh, man. I mean, that's another thing we do in this house. I've got a very young daughter, so... Like, I remember as a kid loving watching the adverts. My parents used to tape them for me, right? And I'd have videotapes full of adverts. So I'm like, let's see if she likes adverts because she's got the attention span of, like, a moth, right? So she does. So we do watch a lot of vintage adverts anyway, but there are ones... Like, when you watch vintage ad compilations, you only get, like, the creme de la creme.
Oh, you get the best ones. You don't get the shit.
Yeah, you get the red car and the blue car and chips, it's chips and stuff like that. These adverts are shit. I remember all of them so fucking well.
And it's the sort of thing as well. Like normally, if we had this video on YouTube, it's the only place we can watch it. And you're thinking, right, I need to get through a couple of episodes. You see ads coming on. You see the pre-roll from CITV. Oh, bollocks to that. I'm just going to skip it.
Yeah.
Nope. Not a fucking second.
Oh, hell no. As soon as I realised what was happening.
10 minutes to my day yesterday.
Yeah, as soon as I realized what was happening, I was like, no, I'm all in for this. Like, I'm 100% all in for this.
Amazing how many I remembered as well.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. So, look, whoever you are out there that did that, like, we salute you, sir.
Absolutely. Like,
that's the way to do things. Because, like, if you don't want to watch that, as you rightly said, Mike, you can always just fucking skip it, right? But for those of us that
you've got
do.
You've got a slider
like,
there, but.
Definitely added value content. All right, so let's get into it. It sounds like you've had a similar response to me. I enjoyed the fuck out of this, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I've
really enjoyed
nervous.
Watching it.
I think I watched about 8 episodes of the first season. I haven't gone into the later ones just because I didn't have time. I will because, fuck me.
You've done the same as me, pretty much.
Yeah, so I put it on, and the very first episode, the pilot episode, I was really nervous because the candle after was far louder than the rest of the sound. Some of the gags, there were three... overtly racist jokes in the opening 10 seconds. I was thinking, oh, fuck, this is going to be a real slog. And then I think they learned from that pilot, because once you get past that, and the pilot wasn't bad either once it settled in.
No.
But once you got past that opening, so that opened probably a minute.
Yeah.
And they started introducing the characters and stuff. It settled down. But yeah, once you're past that, I had a great time. And again, now, surprised how much I remembered of it.
I've got to be honest, I know exactly those overtly racist jokes you're on about. But it was
at
that
point. But the
black guy
and the Asian girl made them, so it's fine.
Right. Honestly, like, I did pause it there and then when they did it, and I thought, hang on a minute. It wasn't going to stop me watching the show because, you know, as we've said before, listeners, we have to acknowledge that this stuff was not acceptable back then, but just happened. And you just acknowledge it's wrong now and you move on. So I sat down and I thought about it, and I was like, no, actually, I think this is okay. And then I pressed play again. I got the punchline. And I was like, no, it's definitely okay, because that was fucking funny.
Yeah, like, it's satire. It's, yeah. You've got the I can't remember the exact wording, but you've got... he makes a comment about he's American, about a Yankee Doodle. He said, oh, he's not American, he's Canadian. And the Asian girl says, oh, they all look the same.
They
to
all
me.
Look the same, yeah. Boom. Brilliant.
Straight off the bat, you're thinking, that's what I'm getting here.
Yeah, brilliant. I thought
and
that was really sharp.
Once that punchline came out, I was like, right, okay, I know what this is now.
Me too.
That's the level they're pitching at. And at that point, I kind of relaxed a little bit.
Me
and
too.
And it's still like, you know, a few dodgy gags here and there. But again, you've got to look at the time and things like that. And you think, well, actually, yeah, they kind of, they sell based on what it is. I was more concerned with canned laughter off the back of that gag because it was too loud and it just sounded horrendous. After that, once it settled in, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, the canned laughter is horrendous. But I've thought long and hard about this canned laughter because it's a big part of this show. It's very, very loud, like you say, some of the most egregious canned laughter I think you'll ever hear. But I think, and we've said this about canned laughter on the show before, I think the show would lose its personality without it.
Oh,
is
completely.
The problem. I think if this was more like if this was more like a modern sitcom without the canned laughter, I think a lot of this would fall flat, is the problem. Yeah. Particularly because in places it is quite silly. Yes. And I think, you know, removing the canned laughter adds a level of realism that then, if you're going to be very, very slapstick and very, very silly, you're not going to get away with that. Whereas because of the canned laughter, they do. So I think the canned laughter is warranted. It's never good, but I think it's warranted. And I think it adds to the personality of the show.
You do sort of dial into it a little bit. And
you do.
You get to a point where you don't notice it anymore.
You definitely do. I think, you know, by the time I was sort of 5-10 minutes into that pilot, I was just, it's fine. It's just there and you get on with it. But yeah, it's interesting that we both picked up on that same joke as well then. There is an episode later in the run as well, I think it's episode 3 or 4, where there is a lot of body shaming, which didn't sit right with me either. That whole episode actually is
that was
horrible.
That was probably the only time I thought, hang on, I don't really know if I want. And they were doing it from, again, there was an episode of, I think it was Saved by the Bell that did it as well, a couple of years later than this, whereby I think it was Elizabeth Berkley's character was had a similar thing. She was doing some cheerleading thing or some gymnastics thing or something, and she was told she was too big. Mm-hmm. And what they meant was she was a fucking giant. Like, Elizabeth Berkley was probably the tallest member of that cast.
Yeah.
But it was taken as she was too broad, she was too fat, she wouldn't be able to succeed. And then she went on the fucking diet pills and got addicted and all the rest of it. That was handled in a far more sensitive way than this. And that was probably only 3 or 4 years removed. This felt very heavy-handed.
It did.
Insofar as you had... you could see what they were trying to do. You had a character who... It's the annoying character. It's the one you're not supposed to like. Being really, really overly confrontational about people's weight, about people's appearance. You've got one who's thin, but she's short and stout. You've got one who's got the ginger one, he's a lanky carrot or an anemic carrot. They were just unnecessary insults, because none of these people were overweight it's an 80s sitcom. They were all relatively attractive anyway. So nobody there was it's like saying that that supermodel's uglier than that one.
Mm.
It's still relative. And it was done through her, and then they can get her back in a number of ways, but the way they actually went about it then was to then dig up dirt on her and ridicule her for that. And I thought, oh shit, yeah, this is a bit, no pun intended, this is a bit too on the nose. The gag was to get a nose job. But again, I think the way they turned that around, handled it, the fact that the rest of the cast who weren't involved in the joke, they're like, no, that's too far, it's too much. And just because she did it doesn't mean you should do it. And actually it became, as an episode, it's quite cringeworthy, but there was a teachable moment in there. And I think that, bear in mind, this is a kid's sitcom as well. It kind of sits in that bracket where, yes, okay, it's funny, and yes, you've got the silly gags where they're putting the Groucho Marx nose and mustache on, and they're making fun of how she had a nose job, but actually turning around and say, no, that's not cool. Don't be such a dick.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with the way they turned it around. However, it was, I mean, when they're making fun of her with a nose job, it's cringeworthy is the right word. Like, it hurt to watch. To be honest, it was really painful. But it was more the stuff at the start initially, where she's calling them out for being overweight and they're not at all, and just being really, like, properly body shaming, particularly towards the girls. Again, you just have to acknowledge that's wrong and move past it. It was just, that was the only episode in the ones that I've watched so far where I've gone, ooh. Yeah, generally they do manage to land the gags on the right side of things. It's interesting as well, you've already mentioned it, kids show, of course it has to be categorized as a kid show, otherwise we wouldn't really be talking about it. But the one thing I did get out of this was actually, for these kind of kid sitcoms that were around at the time, this one definitely seems to sit more in that kind of family sitcom bracket. This doesn't feel like a kid show to me at all.
It doesn't.
In the slightest.
If you look at the team behind it as well, I think the producers were also writers on Michelangelo,
right?
They had the ITV kids sitcom on lock at that point. They were churning these things out left, right, and centre for Thames, and I think that the people involved in it, they realised that actually there was something more in this, and I think this was usually the last show of the day before it went, whatever day of the week it was on. it was on, like, the last one was finished at 5 o'clock or 5:10 for Home and Away at the start. So it was always treated, it was the more adult of the kids' shows. So in the same slot, you had Press Gang, you had Children's Ward and stuff like that. Yeah. So no, it always dealt with slightly meatier things. So yeah, I can see where you're coming from. It's not a kids' sitcom in that respect. And I think you're right, it does sit more in that family bracket. And if you put this on a Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock, it would have done equally as well, I think.
It definitely would have
fit that slot.
Yeah, it definitely would have. I think, some of the creative team were involved with Teabag and T-Shirt as well.
Yes,
which
they were.
Is another
yeah.
one that's on our list. So again, it's that kind of CITV stable. But I think what lends it that feel is probably, like you mentioned, Press Gang there as well. And it's the fact that it's removed from a school environment. That's what gives it that. These are, like, they're young adults. This is about young adults. It's not about school kids. Like, it's not to say, you know, any of them might not have been in school.
You're talking 16 to 19 sort of bracket.
But it's about that work environment. You know, in these earlier episodes where it's mentioned, for instance, Samantha James's character has moved down from Scotland to start a life of her own, and she's got her own flat, and she's, you know, got all of that going on. So, you know, she's clearly left school and is a young adult. Incidentally, seeing her in the first two episodes blew my fucking mind.
I knew she was in it. I did not. When I was pulling stuff up on IMDb, because I was looking for the guy who played TJ. I was trying to work out where I'd seen him before. I couldn't fucking find anything, but I saw her name on the credits on IMDb. Now, what really baked my sweet is that fucking Scottish accent.
Well, that's because
given that she's from fucking Essex. I thought she did a very good job
because she shows up in episode two. Inexplicably, she wasn't in the pilot. Yeah. She shows up in episode two, and like, bearing in mind, I'm watching it like on a phone as well, because I tend to watch it in my lunch break, and we're watching it on YouTube, as we said, so it's VHS quality via YouTube. It's not the best quality. And so as soon as she popped up, I'm like, that looks like Samantha Janus. And then she opened her mouth, and I'm like, no, it can't be. But then the more I watch it, I'm convincing myself that, like,
yeah,
no, it definitely is. So then I go and check the credits on IMDb, because she's not listed as Samantha Janus anymore.
Samantha, I'm like, Womack now.
Yeah. Oh, it's not. And then I'm like, no, hang on. Yes, it is. Because marriage is a thing. And so, like, for the first day or so of watching this, all I could think about was, like, is that Samantha Janus? Because it really looks like it. And then she's gone again, because she's only in, like, two episodes.
Yeah, she's only in those two episodes.
How weird.
But the way they do it as well, because in the pilot, they talk about the fact that there's supposed to be five operatives and there's only four. And then he hires Stanley off the street. In the next episode, there are six, because Samantha Janus is there.
Yeah.
Inexplicably. She's in the restaurant, but no, they're all there all day, every day. So it's not as if there are shift patterns or anything like that. And then she's in the following episode where she's pretending to be the manager because her parents come down and she's trying to convince them that actually she's not a complete fucking degenerate and all the rest of it. And then the fourth episode, they've written her out. She's just decided to leave.
It's really weird.
It is. And you think, well, if you think of the transient nature of that sort of workforce, whereby actually people don't stick around for long.
It's true. It is true.
It's a Saturday job, isn't it? And it's just like, yeah, she's got another job. Fuck it. She's gone.
Yeah.
And that was it.
But they actually, like, to their credit, they go to great pains to actually give her a complete arc, though, and write her in and out. Because she does just show up in that second episode, but there is at least an initial line of dialogue about it being her first day and stuff, and welcome to Spats, and this, that, and the other. So they transition her in, and then when she leaves, it does feel quite rushed, but that episode finishes, and then there's almost a coda scene where they just go, like, oh, it's a shame she's gone or whatever. And so they write her out as well.
Yeah.
Like, they don't just, you know, and that's more than this kind of show would generally do, I feel. Yeah. Like, that's credit to everyone involved. To go, no, she was a character that existed. Like, we've given her a little mini arc, so let's put a full stop on that character arc.
And realistically, there's nothing stopping that character coming back at another point, whether it's coming back to work or coming back as a customer. There's that availability. So yeah, that took me a minute as well. I knew she was going to pop up, but it was the accent that did me. I was like, oh, hang on. And I thought, is that a real accent? No, she's from, like, southeast. Or is she Scottish? And she does
I had to do the exact same thing because
I went and looked at her. Yeah, she's from Brighton. I said, hang on.
Yeah,
but that was the only thing I didn't understand, why they made her Scottish.
Because it fit, I guess, with the story.
Yeah, it fit the bit of moving down and sort of starting her own life and stuff like that. But then why not hire a Scot with a Scottish accent?
Yeah.
Or why not make her from somewhere outside of London? Because it's in London.
Yeah.
It can be from anywhere.
Really, really fucking odd choice, but it absolutely blew my mind to see her pop up.
Yeah, actually fucking nailed it as well.
She's excellent. Absolutely excellent. Like I missed her greatly as soon as she was gone. But, you know, the show was still carried on and still was very good. The whole cast, to be fair, are all excellent. Like, that is one of the standout things for me with the show. I thought the writing was very good, first and foremost.
Yes.
And I mean the comedy writing. I'm not just talking about, like, narratively, it's pretty good as well. The episodes are all pretty tight. I just think the gags are funny, as we've already mentioned. Occasionally they're silly, but that's British comedy for you, particularly British sitcoms at this time. But I thought the performances, you know, considering these are all young actors, were all very, very good. And there is a tendency in these children's sitcoms to really pitch for the stalls and overact. And I think actually most of the time they don't do that. And the comic timing on these kids as well is fucking excellent. Like, they really know how to land a joke. So I think that helps massively. You know,
yeah, I think so.
Not that there are that many misgivings, I think, that need to be overlooked here. I genuinely think that, look, you have to take this for what it is. It's a fucking sitcom, right? It's not winning any awards. But as sitcoms go, it is a perfectly competent one. You know, everything it needs to do, it does very well. So, it's got misgivings, but they are misgivings of the genre. It's not Spatz's fault.
No, that's it. You know, I mean, I was trying to peg it. So I did some work when I was just after I finished my degree. I did some work with Sue Tedden, who wrote a lot of Birds of the Feather, and lots of stuff, seminars and lots of workshops and stuff with her. And I was looking at going, if you know, you've got your standards with your sitcom, especially British sitcoms, where you've got X number of beats per page, you've got to hit X number of jokes per episode, stuff like that. And every part of that was spot on. You three gags a minute. You've seed in your payoff, and everything was it's formulaic as all fuck, but it hit every single beat. And I thought, hang on, as you said, this isn't what you generally expect from kids shows of this era, because they're not generally given the respect to go, we're going to treat it like any other sitcom. We're going to treat it like it's Birds of the Feather, like it's Blackadder, like it's Monty. No, anything we're putting together, it's got to be the right standard. And this is probably the only example I can remember. And it's not obviously because we only watched it this week, but I don't remember many of the other shows I was watching at the time being that on point.
Definitely not. That was the first thing that struck me, because I was expecting it, to be honest, to be hard going. Because a lot of these live action shows, like other than the creme de la creme, you know, like we've looked at Clarissa, we've looked at Sabrina, you know, so other than the creme de la creme, a lot of these live action shows will date very badly and they will feel cringeworthy. But this doesn't, because you're right. I think it's treated with that level of respect that it can actually stand head and shoulders with its peers of the time. Like, it's not, I personally would not judge this against other children's sitcoms so much as I would judge it against other sitcoms of the late 80s, early 90s. Now, look, there are some heavy hitters in there that it's not going to stand up to. But then I think it towers above what would be the children's sitcom so much. Like, you've already mentioned Mike and Angelo, Teabag and T-Shirt, you know, all of those. Like, I think probably the nearest thing I could compare it to quality-wise would be Chuckle Vision, just in as much as that takes itself as seriously as this does. For what it's a comedy, but for what it does, you know, for the craft of comedy, then I think Chucklevision takes itself as seriously. It's just that it's more silly. But again, we talked at the time when we talked about Chucklevision, about there was something that sort of transcended generations with that.
Yes.
And I genuinely got that from this as well. Like, now as a 40-something adult with a certain degree of lived experience in the stuff that this sitcom's going on about, admittedly, all right, but now as a 40-something adult, I'm watching this and enjoying it anew, just as a child I was watching it. Now, as a child, I didn't have that lived experience. I was way too young to have got a job when this first aired. I think I was probably about 10 or 11 when this first hit the air. I'm pretty certain I was just leaving junior school and going into comp. It was around about that time.
Yeah, it was 90 to 92, I think it was on.
There you go, yeah. So that would be about right then. So I would have been 90 to 92. So that would have been me between the ages of 9 and 11. So just coming to the end of junior school and transitioning up. So no way to have a job. And in fact, McDonald's wasn't even really a fucking thing. Certainly not in our part of the world. Like, you went there for birthday parties. Yeah. like, that's it. You went there for birthday parties, but that was it. But then, interestingly, right, now we're going off topic again. Spats as a burger bar definitely reminds me more of Wimpy or the Great British Burger that we used to have than a McDonald's.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I think that's got to be the uniforms, isn't it? That's the only reason I can think of it.
It's the uniforms, but also the set design. So it was originally envisaged as a 1930s sitcom around a restaurant. That's where, because people who went there would be wearing spats. It was
I know that makes, now the title makes sense, because I cannot work out the spats of it all.
Yeah, so that was the original pitch, and then that's where you've got the guy with the tap dancing, and you've got the uniforms and all the rest of it. And then, so that was pitched, and the Thames liked the idea, but they weren't quite sure it was going to pay off in that way. So when they then when they picked it up and they passed it to producers, they modernized it. Said, right, we'll keep the aesthetic, we'll keep the name, because spats, obviously, it's the clothing and all the footwear. So we've got that, we can keep that theme, but also it's like people having a spat, people having an argument. So it lends itself to the type of comedy you're going to get as well. But if you look at the set design, it's all very sort of Art Deco. It's all, no, you've got sort of the pink walls and the uplighters, and then sort of the very angular sort of white backgrounds and stuff like that. So it kind of, it looks like it's been taken seriously as well. It looks very much like they've gone, right, okay, well, this is what a fast food restaurant looks like. And as you said, McDonald's wasn't really a thing here. It was here, but you generally didn't go because they were quite expensive compared to Wimpy and some of the other really cheap, shitty ones we had.
And also they were like, if you wanted to go to McDonald's, like from where I am, and I'm just down the road from when I grew up now, but from here to go to McDonald's was like a 45-minute drive. That was our nearest McDonald's. It's not like today.
There's one in Swansea, which was 30-40 minutes away.
Yeah, I had to drive to Cardiff, whereas now, like, I can leave my front door and walk to a McDonald's within,
between me and you,
20 minutes.
Of them, we're only like 10 miles up the road.
Yeah, and I can literally walk to one, because in the mid-90s to early 2000s then, drive-thrus became a thing and they started popping over. Like, certainly by the time I was driving, the ones around by you were in existence. Yeah. So, you know, like, I could drive to one in like 15 minutes. But at this time, they just weren't a thing. Like, I went to McDonald's for a birthday party when I was about this age, and that was about the only time I can remember going as a kid. You know, it just wasn't a thing.
Yeah, that's same with me. And when anybody was doing that for birthdays, we'll go swimming first. We go to Swansea, so you go to the leisure centre, you've got 2 hours in there, then you go to McDonald's, and then you're taken home.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's somebody's birthday party. And that was the only time you ever went. But there was a Wimpy, I think there was one in Neath, and then they opened one in the middle of Petorba, which failed spectacularly because nobody wanted to eat there. Mm. But yeah, it was kind of a time where Wimpy was dying to death a little bit in the UK. But yeah, seeing the restaurant in spats coming back to that, it immediately reminded me of that, even this of the more seating upstairs sign and the font of that, it looked exactly like a fucking Wimpy sign.
Yeah, it really does. And I think it's the neon as well. Because like McDonald's, when you did go there, they had like the big light up plastic shop front signs and stuff. Whereas Wimpy was far more old fashioned, and it was like neon lights in the window and sticky menus on the tables. And I think the biggest part of it is probably their uniforms, because they're in those kind of pink uniforms with the kind of aprons on as well. And I just remember everybody Wimpy having an apron, because they used to come to your table and take your order. You wouldn't go to a till and order and stuff, because you get it on an actual fucking plate back then as well. You wouldn't now, you know. And in fact, the only place it's interesting, isn't it, because it's kind of flipped now, because if you want a Wimpy now, you've probably got to drive like 2 hours out of the way somewhere.
I don't even know where there is one.
There was one in Porthcawl. I don't know if it's still there. There was one.
Oh, that's gone.
I've got a feeling there's one in Newport still. And the odd motorway service station, you can still get. They don't do the bender. Well, they still do the bender in a bun, but it's not called a bender in a bun anymore, because political correctness in it. But, you know, as a small child, asking for a bender in the bun was the highlight of your week, because you couldn't say it without laughing. I want a bender in a bun. Like, you couldn't say it without laughing. So, yeah, they're still out there. Wimpy are still going. They're just very, very few and far between. Wow, we went well down a rabbit hole. It was inevitable that would happen on this episode. We were bound to talk about fast food restaurants.
Yeah, we were both fat kids. It was always going to come up.
Right. But, yeah, so getting back to it, like I didn't have that baked in experience of neither the environment nor the situation. I just remember enjoying it because it was funny, and I think I probably just liked the characters. But now as an adult, obviously I've got some connection to that, so it works more on that situational level.
There is, and I think as well there's a universality to the fact that you've got people on basically minimum wage doing service jobs treated like shit,
yes,
and hating their jobs but knowing they've got to stick it because they've got to pay rent, they've got to pay bills. And it's again, it's sort of teeing people up. I mean, this was the sort of the late 80s, early 90s, certainly late 80s when it was being written. And we're at the point where jobs aren't exactly fucking flourishing anywhere. People aren't flush. So you've got people going, I need this job because I can't keep the fucking lights on without it. I hate it. It's shit. And okay, the situations and sort of the scenarios are sort of completely outlandish and all the rest of it. But people will have identified that. So people of that age, certainly, the young adults sort of the 16 to 19 year olds would have identified with it. And kids growing up would have identified their parents going, all these shitty jobs they really don't fucking want, but they have to have because otherwise we're in Eden this week.
Yeah.
And there's a universality to that. And even if you look now, that still pops up when you've got workplace sitcoms. There's always the ones who don't want to fucking be there, but they have to be.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's definitely got that element to it. You've also mentioned like the transient nature of like it gets all of that. It gets that these are kids just trying to get a bit of extra scratch to go. Like there were lines in the first few episodes where they're going out, like they're going to work just to earn money to go out on the weekend, or just to earn money to go to a concert or take a girl out or whatever. And it's that. It's kids working for fun money, essentially.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Samantha Genesis' character, just working to afford to pay the rent on a flat because she's fled Scotland and moved to London.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all of these people sort of striving to get by. And I think it's also, not that that's a unique concept by any stretch, because, we certainly had that earlier in the decade. But I think it sits on the cusp of the explosion of that that's about to come. Because if you look after this, then, that kind of house share workmate sitcom became huge then. Just mentioning Samantha Janus, for instance, she would then go on to be in things like Game On, for instance, which would explode. Yeah. And again, all of these kind of just young, lower-level professionals tended to be the thing then, just striving to make ends meet. And so it kind of sits on the cusp of that. But it also reminded me a lot, and it was right back in episode one, I think what tuned me into it straight away after that gag, what really sold it to me was, for some reason, and I think this is the credit of the cast, it just reminded me, it had big Empire Records energy. Of just like this gang of just disaffected, could not give a fuck youths. Yeah, gang of misfits who are only all friends because they all work in the same burger bar, because otherwise they got fuck all in common with each other, really.
Yeah, exactly.
They just all happen to work in the same place and they're all pulling towards a common goal because they hate their boss. They like their line manager, they hate their fucking boss. But actually, the boss isn't all that bad.
And I think that they did a lot. The first couple of episodes, she was them. What was Karen, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They went out of their way to sort of demonize her the first couple of episodes, and she was anti everything. She was the reason everything went wrong. And they did, it was round about the episode where they did the fat shaming, the fact that sort of picked up on the nose job, they did start to humanize her and make her a little softer.
Yes.
And as it progressed, she just became a bit more normal. I haven't watched the second or third seasons, and I will. But I think that the tendency would have been to try and humanize it. So they get to a point where they've humanized it, actually we haven't got an antagonist anymore, and then taking it all the way back to the start and make her an absolute cunt again. And that's the only fear I'd have, is they undo any character development with her. But I don't know that. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I hope they tread the line correctly, because they've got, the dynamic between her and TJ at the moment is because I'm about the same place as you. I'm saying at the moment this show is fucking 20 years old, but more than that.
30.
But at the moment, in terms of our rewatch, then, where we've both done pretty much the majority of the first season, I'm definitely watching the rest of it as well. Incidentally, I really am having a fucking really good time watching this. I'm into it. But the dynamic between the two of those is perfect. They are diametrically opposed, where he's the relatable kind of line manager almost, and he's down with the kids and he's got a heart of gold. Whereas she's like the hard-nosed boss. But ultimately, yeah, you get the impression that if the shit hits the fan, she would absolutely go to bat for every single one of them, and this is all just a front. They get that dynamic right, and there's also just really great chemistry between the two of them. Anytime they've got a scene together, they're absolutely excellent as the grown-ups in the room. You know, I don't know where it's going to go because I don't remember enough about it, but there's definitely room for a little bit of a romance arc there as well. They've definitely got chemistry. Kind of a will they, won't they sort of thing.
And I think, I mean, that was certainly a thing that was done an awful lot in 80s sitcoms, be they kids or otherwise. It's the temptations of how much of it they lean into and how much they go, you know what, we don't necessarily need that. The chemistry is right as it is. And introducing the extra complication that never really works that well, because I think everyone's expecting Cheers and they don't get it.
Yeah, I think where they are with them is perfect as long as they can grow as characters and retain that relationship. What I am quite impressed with so far, bearing in mind it's a gang of young adults, as we've said, it's this workplace comedy about a gang of young adults. What I'm impressed with so far is they've avoided like pairing them up completely. Like there has been no move whatsoever to couple anyone up in the episodes that I've made.
No,
that I've watched.
In the early ones, you do get the allusions from Dexter towards Karen, where he's a bit smitten with her because she's the boss and she's an attractive woman. She's way out of his league,
so that's fine.
Oh, completely. And it's very much one of those where it's almost like you get a kid with a crush, and the adult's just like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, totally.
It's just humouring him to the point where it's like, look, now you're being a dick, go away. And there's a little bit of that the first couple, and it seems to die off a little bit. And they make him a bit more than just this one note joke about the fact that, again, he thinks he's a bit smooth, a bit smart as well. You've got Vince who thinks he's a wheeler dealer, and all. So they move away from these sort of early stereotypes and try to make them a bit more rounded. And I think that's where the characters come in. And I think you're right. I think if they tried to pair them off, I think that would have been very tricky because all of a sudden you've got that extra dynamic. And you look at some of the best sitcoms around from the time. Friends was only, what, 3 or 4 years after this. And the line they had to tread and how badly they fucked it up so many times where they tried to pair characters up.
Yeah.
And you think it generally doesn't work because you're introducing a dynamic that doesn't fit within a workplace comedy.
Yeah, totally.
I know. If it's a relationship-based sitcom, then it'll work. But if it's supposed to be about the place of work and about the dynamic of the group as is, you shift that dynamic by pairing people up. All of a sudden, you've got they withdraw from some of the social aspects, or they're then constantly trying to fix them up with their mates, so they've got other couples to deal with, and all this stuff. It just lends itself to become really fucking bland.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do well. See The Office. I know you're not a fan, Mark, but you want to see that done well. Just look at The Office. I mean, our Office. I can't speak for the American one. And I know they have a similar dynamic over there. Never watched that one.
As a show, I preferred it by the way that Martin Freeman and, what was her name again? Jasper Carrot's daughter, whose name
I know. Her name's
Lucy something.
Yeah. Tim and Dawn. Whatever her name. Right. Because that's who they are to me. That's who they'll always be.
I'm not a fan of The Office. I have watched it all the way through, and I thought the way that relationship played out, as opposed to Pam and John Krasinski's character, whose name I can't remember either. Jim. Yes. So that was, I think, the version here was done a lot better.
Yeah, I mean that's because it's just shorter and more condensed, so they were able to plan that better, I think. Also,
yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very only good. 20 episodes.
Very good writer. We can argue about that later. It is difficult to do. But I think you're right. It's especially difficult to do with such a large group as well. That's the thing. Like, this is a very large core group of characters that they're dealing with here. And yet somehow they managed to give everyone room to breathe. You know, in the early kind of episodes, it does tend to be, I found, a focus towards Vince. But then only in as much as that then allows that character to grow a little bit. Then they just seem to back off a little bit then, and just give the floor to somebody else.
You had it with him, and you had the first couple of episodes. Yeah, so it was, you had the first couple where Julius Wilder pops up, and he's there's this thing about the fact that he's always flirting and he always gets the girls and all the rest of it. And so, and this is the episode where the guy's wallet goes missing, and it there's a whole misunderstanding about the fact that he's accused of stealing it, and actually it's in Karen's briefcase because she scooped it all up with everything else on the desk. And they do that, and then they seem to sort of come away from him and then go on to Dexter.
Yes.
And you get the episode with him about going to France, where he thinks he's winning a trip to Paris, and actually he's winning a trip to go and work in Paris. So they spend a couple on him, and then I think that just tends to be the way they do this. So they go, right, okay, well, we don't want to have a main character because it's an ensemble piece. Mm. TJ's kind of our way in, our cipher, because he's the fish out of water. He's over from Canada, so he's introducing us to all the people he's meeting and the restaurant and all the rest of it. So we've got that, but then it's almost like they go, well, yeah, let's give Dexter a couple of episodes. Right, now let's give Stanley an episode. And it's just like they're going, right, we've got this ensemble cast. Let's actually use it, not just have a central focus of one or two characters and make everybody else a backing artist. And again, that would be so tempting to do with such a large cast, is you know make everyone else your foil and your fodder and focus on your two biggest and brightest and most charismatic characters. And
yeah.
They've done really well to avoid doing that.
I think they have. And I think as the show progresses as well, it's a sitcom, so nobody's character is particularly unique. But I think in those early episodes where they'll focus on a person, then another person, then another person, they round those characters off enough so that they know how to deploy them then in later episodes. That's the thing. You can have an episode where they might just pop up for a line or two if needed, because you get to know these characters. So I think they do very well with that. And I think, you know, character progression in a lot of shows, a lot of this show's peers then, is rare, you know, especially in a children's sitcom. It's like, they would stick with, Vince is the wide boy. You know, and that would be it. That is his character. There will be no layers to that whatsoever. Whereas actually, you know, in that episode with the wallet, there's all of that stuff taken in there about actually, you know, he's trying to take a little bit of culture in because he wants to impress Juris Rahala's character. So he's trying to be upwardly mobile in some ways. He's been tarred with a brush of steel in the wallet and stuff like that. And he gets very offended by that. And so they make effort to move these characters on, you know, and that's something a lot of these shows would just be lather, rinse, repeat, you know, particularly these kids sitcoms. It would be like, here's your characters, you know who they are, this is what they're doing this week, and go. And look, we've praised that formula in the past because you know what you're getting, right? And when it's done well, it just works and that's it. You know, see Bodger and Badger, for instance, like every week, this is what's going to happen. Bodger and Badger are going to go and do something, chaos ensues, mashed potato everywhere. Chuckle Brothers, same thing. This week, the Chuckle Brothers are wrestling. This week, the Chuckle Brothers are cleaning windows. Hilarity ensues. But then you reset every week. You don't move forward.
Yes.
Whereas this moves forward and progresses. You know, we already talked about writing in and out Samantha Janice's character.
Yeah.
I can't think of another show at this time that would have even made that effort. They would have just gone, she's gone now. Not even explain it. Or they would have recast her. Would have been the most common thing. They would have just gone, just recast her. Keep the character. Recast it, it'll be fine, and she'll just show up next week with like kids brown hair. The kids, they won't notice.
And she'll be a Geordie,
but they treat the audience with more respect than that, and I think that's what makes it feel more like a, I don't want to say adult sitcom because it isn't, but it's definitely a family sitcom.
It's a family sitcom.
I've
been watching Full House recently because Jess got into Full House. She found out on Netflix and she binged it. And at first watch, it's annoying as fuck because it's an 80s sitcom, but made in the the 2010s, and it doesn't really, the type of humor doesn't translate. The candle after is annoying. The characters are still, because it's the same cast, it's the same characters, so they're trying to play what they were playing in the 80s. But actually, it kind of, again, it settles in, and once it realizes what it is, it settles in. They got 5 years out of that. But going back and watching Full House, Who's the Boss? Different Strokes, Family Ties, all this sort of shit. And yes, okay, quality wise, I'd say they're better because there was more money involved in them. They weren't done as kid shows; they were done as family shows. So the budget was there. But actually, if you look at the writing, you look at the character progression, you look at some of the stories they do, I'd put it on a par with a lot of them.
that's definitely where it belongs. You mentioned Family Ties there. That's the one that's been in the back of my head in terms of a comparable show watching this, just in terms of its tone and where it's pitched. Because, you know, I remember that being on at like 6:30, 7 o'clock. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't yeah. like late night TV. I remember being on Sky, especially like you'd have Neighbours, then you'd flip over.
Yeah.
By the way, just for listeners out there who may be interested, you know, we were poor, we weren't rich enough to afford Sky, but we did have hooky cable. Just want to put that out there.
Hooky,
you know?
Cable. Yeah.
Yeah. Hooky
cable.
And
my grandfather wouldn't call it cable because it was a pipe.
Yeah.
So it was always stuff on the pipe.
Yeah. We had a hooky. Hooky cable box. And you just flick the switch. Just doing that, just laying that out there to distance myself from Rishi Sunak listeners. Just want to make it absolutely clear. Wasn't richer than the Sunaks growing up. We stole our cable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. we didn't have Sky. I mean, we didn't get Sky in our house until I was 19.
Yeah.
And that's because I was going to pay for it. It fits with those shows. And I say they weren't late night shows or late night sitcoms. They were pre-Watershed, family based sitcoms where if you don't want to watch the news because the news is full of shit, put that on and you'll get Family Ties, Different Strokes, all this sort of stuff. And you could have transported this quite easily from being this of the 4:30 sitcom on ITV on a Tuesday to being a 6 o'clock, 6:30 show. And
absolutely.
The only thing you would have suffered is you'd have had more ads in the middle, which looking back now would have been fine. At the time, would have been really fucking annoying. And it probably would have run past time, actually, because they're 25 minutes without any ads in the middle.
And fuck me, we had a lot of adverts back then, didn't we? That's the one thing I noticed with the ad breaks in it as well. Like,
ad breaks like 5 minutes.
Whoa. Like, yeah, those ads go on forever. I was enjoying the fuck out of them, so I didn't care. But they went on forever. It could definitely...
At the time,
sit.
I'd have fucking hated them.
Yeah, me too. It could definitely sit alongside those. And I'd like to say, that's not to make a comparison in quality, but just in terms of the tone and the type of show it is. And it also, it's got this weird blend of kind of, and maybe it's because it's the Canadian co-production as well, I don't know, but it's got this weird blend of like the slapstick, slightly weird British visual comedy.
Yeah.
And the much sharper kind of machine gun dialogue that you get in American sitcoms.
Yes.
And it kind of smashes the two together. And I, like, we get that a lot now because that's what sitcoms have become. Even over here, like we've accepted that amalgam now of our sitcoms. And I think our humor has slightly bled into the American sitcoms as well. So they've become kind of one. But I was trying to think at the time of something else which does that. And I really couldn't. You know, when we did Maid Marian, when we did Maid Marian, we were saying then about how it was reminiscent of those kind of late 80s, early 90s British sitcoms because they had such a style. And this has elements of that style, but it doesn't actually fit in that category at all, does it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the one that's stood out for me is you talk about sort of the very physical, the very slapstick sort of British comedy style against the episode where they're doing fat shaming. And sort of Karen tells TJ to sort of do a warm-up or sort of lead the group for a sort of an exercise. And he puts himself into a position, throws his back out, and they all immediately copy him.
Yeah.
Even down to the fact they all sort of make the same scream in the same pitch and the same volume and all the rest of it. And it's this stupid, very, very base level humour that, you know, well, they're all supposed to copy him. Clearly, he's not doing that on purpose. Clearly, he's in pain. Clearly, he's fallen over. And clearly, they realise that. But they've been told to copy him, so they copy him.
Yeah.
And so you get that. But then you do then get the rapid-fire gags. I think it's in the first episode, again, where the snake is missing.
Yes.
And it's all these gags. It starts off with the snake is called Monty. Oh, Monty Python, I love that show. What show? And then something else comes in, And you base this entire dialogue, this entire scene, on this dialogue about nothing because there's a snake called Monty.
Yeah.
And it marries the two very well at times. Other times I think it tries a bit too hard. Some of the gags don't quite land. But generally I think it's pretty solid.
But that's sitcoms though, isn't it? You know, the whole point. It's not every gag will land. I will say
you want to be looking so 6 or 7, 6 or 7 for every 10 gags needs to land. And I think that they exceed that quite comfortably.
Oh, easily. And I will say the MVP, you've actually just mentioned one of my favorite gags, actually, in all of the episodes that I've watched, the Monty Python, is the delivery of it. And I think the MVP of the show is Stanley for that reason. Like when I talk about how they know to
deploy
these characters.
There's a very Rodney sort of vibe to it.
Oh, absolutely. He's absolutely Rodney. No doubt about it. Just the kind of gormless, like idiotic. Well, there's kind of, there's elements of trigger in there as well, though, isn't there? We're just
I was
at
just
the right
say,
time.
Yeah, there's
you'll pop
in terms
up
of
and
stupidity
say,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
like that gag in particular. It's very trigger.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, generally, there was a lot of Rodney in that character. He's very, he's intelligent. He's got a particular skill set. He's good. He's good with, you know, he's good with the job.
Guy,
with the people.
And, yeah,
yeah. And he's just a little bit awkward and a little bit shy. Whereas, you know, again, it's this starts off as this caricature, and they sort of they dial it back and actually make him a bit more rounded as they go through that first season. But yeah, there's just that very Nicholas Lyndhurst, certainly at that point when he was doing Fools and Horses, he also did Butterflies, didn't he?
Yes.
What was her name? I can't remember her name, the dark-haired woman. But he had a very specific type of delivery. His body, his movement was very nuanced, but it was always the same. And he had a very particular look, a very particular sort of style of the way he moved, the way he spoke, the way he... And yeah, Stanley just sort of fits that absolutely perfectly.
The look, definitely. He's got the build, doesn't he? He's gangly. He's lanky.
Yeah, he's lanky. He's a bit gormless. Got the slightly longer hair.
Yeah, but I mean,
it just makes him look a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, like the delivery, as you say, on occasions very, very trigger. But then, yeah, the Rodney of it all, again, another one of my favourite lines or passages really comes from him, where they're talking about, I think it's the second or third episode, and he's late for work again. And they're like, you're always late, what's happening? And he goes on this massive story that escalates and escalates and escalates about how, like, his dad burnt the toast and his mum was doing this and then the snake was doing that and then the dog ate his homework or whatever it was and all of this stuff. And then they go, no wonder you're late for work. And he's like, no, I was late for work because my alarm didn't go off. I overslept. That's what it is. And that is totally Rodney, the way he goes through it all and like, woe is me. Like, the whole world is against me. And
it's all my fault.
Yeah, it's actually all my fault. That's all just by the by. And I don't even know when to not tell you stuff. I thought he's absolutely fucking brilliant. Like, he's the star of the show for me. But I think they deploy him expertly in that he's the star of the show, but he never takes centre stage. Because the second you allow a character like that to take centre stage, you know, you get a Kramer or something like that, and it just becomes your show.
For an ensemble piece at that point.
Yeah, exactly. They don't do that. They know what they need him to do, and they just give him those killer lines every episode and just let him spit them out.
I think they
even
lean into it as well when it's the third episode, it's where Samantha Janice's parents are there and they're having a tour, so they're trying to distract TJ. And he's like, I need to show you this fucking spreadsheet.
Yes.
I need to show you this. I need you to come and have a look at this shelf.
Yeah.
And again, on its own, it's ludicrous. If it was you had a whole episode of that, it would be too much. But again, as you said, it's just pitched absolutely right that every now and again, they just go, oh, yeah, shit, we'll just... To get him, just to give him something completely stupid, completely innocuous, but it just sounds so on character, so in character. They go, yeah, there's some napkins that are slightly the wrong colour brown. Come and have a look.
Yeah, and then when he's got him in front of the computer, he's like, if I press this button, I turn it yellow. If I press this button, I turn it blue. And if I press this button, you can see everything at once. And it's just, again, leaning into that character completely. He's great. What an absolute superstar. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else.
So very few of the cast actually went on to do anything else.
The one guy was in Lockstock.
Yeah, so Dexter was in Lockstock. Samantha Janice, obviously Samantha Janice. Mainly it's the supporting cast that popped up. And they called supporting artists as well in the credits, which I thought was a nice touch as well.
I noticed that for Samantha Janice. Yeah, she was listed as supporting artist. Yeah.
So anybody who wasn't sort of regular cast was a supporting artist. But with the exception of Samantha Janice, Judy Suala, Reese E. Fans popped up at some point. I don't know what happened to him. But, you know, apparently he did all right for himself. Local boy. So apart from these sort of couple of cameos, the main cast, apart from the guy who played Dexter, they basically kind of disappeared. Now, I thought I recognised Jennifer Calvert, who was Karen. I recognised the name from somewhere. I recognised her face from somewhere. Cannot find shit she's done since.
Yeah. It's really bizarre. Yeah, I don't really recognize anyone. Vince, I recognize.
He was on Motor Mouth. He was one of their regular hosts. He went on to do a lot, and then he went off to do a lot of backstage stuff. He went off to a lot of puppetry and stuff like that in the early aughts. And now he makes corporate videos. So, you know, living a dream.
Yeah, but I definitely recognised his face and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I did as well. And I was looking up, and it's quite funny when you look at stuff from this era and going, I recognise him, but no, like 10 years later, when he's a bit fatter and a bit greyer and a bit more worn. And yeah, so I went on IMDb again, and he was on Motormouth with Andy Crane. He was one of the character hosts on there, and he went on to do loads of stuff. And now and he's just gone more and more into backstage, behind the scenes stuff, into effects, and then into production, then into directing. So he's still around, but the rest of them, yeah, they just all kind of disappeared.
Which is odd, isn't it? Because they're all really good. So but I guess that's kind of the gamble with a cast of that age. I guess they're all on the cusp of doing something at the right age, where I guess they're deciding if, like, is this what we want to do with our lives? And maybe some of them, then just because you're doing it so young, naturally find that progression into, actually, I'd rather direct. Actually, I'm better off backstage. Actually, I'm more of a presenter, whatever it is.
And not only that as well, I think it became a thing at the time as well. The very few of the, I don't want to say child stars, so no, I'm not sort of talking, you know, Macaulay Culkin age and stuff like that, but a lot of the sort of the late, you know, sort of the young adults, sort of the late teen actors, they all kind of went the same way. They do a bit, they get one or two seasons of something, and then they'd be off, that would be it, they'd disappear because they'd go off and have regular lives, or they couldn't get cast in things because, well, you're the one from The Queen's Nose. Nobody will take you seriously in anything else because you're that one. You were in Spats, so people aren't going to take you seriously as a serial killer. And it's that type of thing. Actually, you get to that point, and I kind of, as fun as it was and as good as it was, it may have actually harmed my career because people now see me in a particular way.
Yeah, I guess. But like, even the adults, so you say you thought you recognised Karen in other things, then didn't know. You know, same with the guy that plays TJ, but I think it's just the accent and the face and the stature.
He was in Batman.
Ah, was he really?
He was unnamed cop number 2 in Batman in the Tim Burton.
Wow, there you go. Well, fair play to him.
But he's one of those who's still working. He pops up in, you know, he'll have been in Doctors twice, and he'll have popped up in some indie thing for like 2 seconds in 2015. So his is probably the most active IMDb of the main cast.
Well, good, because we haven't actually talked about him much. He's by no means a lead, but he's probably the closest thing you've got. Like you said, he's probably a cipher, and I think you're right. He's the closest thing you've got to a way into the show. So he does have to do a lot of the heavy lifting, and I think he does it very well. I think he's excellent. Like for a especially now as older people watching it, he's the closest thing we've got to a lead then. But I think he's really charismatic. And again, he carries that relationship very well with Karen as well. Which could easily, I think, as a kid, be the bits where you're going like, oh, fuck this.
I don't want to see them. I want to see what Scripts is getting into.
Yeah, but I don't ever remember having that reaction as a kid. And believe me, I would remember.
No, I don't remember having it as a kid. I certainly didn't have it now.
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't have it now. I think they're very, very good now. I've mentioned that I think, you know, obviously the timing on some of the kids is great, but actually in terms of just carrying the show on his shoulders, I think he does that very well. You know, we're a standard. I think it tells as well. Comic relief.
Yeah, I think the episode where he puts his back out, and again, I think that's the fat shaming episode.
It is.
I think that's probably the episode he's in the least. And I think, generally, you know, the show is very much a case of, look, it's the kids and their hijinks. And so he's never the central focus. If it's a 25-minute episode, you're never going to get him on screen for 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time. But when you do, he very much commands those scenes because he is the adult, he's the person in charge, and actually there is that bit of authority to the character, which he pulls off very well, but not to the extent where it overshadows the kids and the hijinks.
No,
And I think he's got to get credit for that as well, because I think the performance is far more subtle than we probably deserve in a kid sitcom from 1989, 1990.
It definitely is. I mean, you use the right term. He's got to be the adult in the room. But what that means is, in terms of this, he's got to do a lot of the narrative heavy lifting, right? Because when you need to frame something then, and when you need to pull it back slightly and say, oh, actually, it's not cool to fat shame people or whatever it's going to be. Like, hey, kids, this week, that's on him all the time. Like, yeah, he's the manager, but he's also got to be the heart of the team here because he's the adult in the room. He's the grown-up, and he's the one that's got to contextualize everything for these bunch of fuckwits, essentially, that he's got working under him. And I think...
And actually, in that one as well, you've got in that episode as well, you've got the whole thing whereby he's injured, so he can't go and coach his hockey team, and he's letting the team down. So again, he's just got these little insights of character, which where you think that's probably something you expect more from the kids, more from the main cast, just your cashiers and whatever else, because they're younger and that they're lacking that life experience and all the rest of it. But again, it's just this. That was a very good episode for humanizing the older characters.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they do that.
I think that's probably the only time where he kind of joins in with the sort of the silliness and the jokes about her nose and stuff, because he's off his tits. So it's a departure from his regular character. He still gets to be funny, but he's just being one of the rest of them rather than sort of being the adult in the room. And again, I think he pulls that off very well as well, because again, the temptation would be to make him so completely over the top and make him a fucking Harry Enfield caricature that you wouldn't get the set, you wouldn't feel anything for him other than the fact he's drunk. So as a kid, you think it's fucking hilarious because he's off his tits. As an adult, you're looking and thinking, yeah, you're a wanker.
Yeah, and I think that character always had the potential to slip into that anyway, not just when he's off his tits. There's a potential because of the whole fish out of water element of it, and because of he's the manager, and it, like, you could add in the stress of managing this team of kids and having the restaurant and having Karen to answer to. Like, there would be a tendency to play that large. And he doesn't. I think he pitches it perfectly. Like, he goes large when he needs to.
Yeah.
But then he can also bring it back in and sit the kids down and have a quiet moment, or just throw an offhanded one-liner out to Karen. Like, I think he's very, very good. And I think he carries the show, if I'm honest. Like I say, I think he underpins it all. But in general, all of these separate elements that we've talked about, you can see how they all just come together to form something that is... I mean, you're definitely competent. We've already said it's a competent sitcom, but I actually think it's a good sitcom. It's not one of the best.
I'd say it's better than competent. I wouldn't. It's not brilliant by any means. There are issues with it, but it's good.
It's definitely good.
Nearly 40 years later, it's still watchable, and that's a big testament. You look at a lot of stuff coming from the. If you look at stuff, I mean, we're now in our 40s, and our tastes have changed and our humor has changed and stuff, but I can't imagine sitting down and watching something from the sort of mid to late 70s and going, oh, socially it doesn't stand up because it's an entirely different time and all that shit. But I can't imagine sitting down and watching fucking Steptoe and Son and going, ah, yeah, that's really funny and that works really well. Whereas this, I say, wait, no, this is 32 years since it finished. And we're still sitting here going, yeah, that works. And okay, shouldn't have done that. I possibly wouldn't have done that. But actually, I'd compare this to a lot of other stuff that's really stood the test of time and is still talked about with sort of reverence today. And I think that's a testament to it. And I can't think of anything else of this ilk that would do that.
No. It's something I meant to bring up earlier, and I completely forgot because I think we went off sidetrack talking about burgers.
That's not like us.
It's totally right. But it is interesting how I didn't feel that this was dated at all. Like we mentioned some of those, like the fat shaming and stuff like that. Yeah, you could have got away with then, and you can't now. But in general, the tone of this, it does very much feel like if you just had a different lick of paint on that restaurant, this could be today.
Yeah, like, the cash registers are different. It doesn't, because it doesn't rely on stuff. And we've talked about this in a couple of things. I can't think of examples now, but if you don't rely on your props, the till is a till. Mm-hmm. And if you're making it now, it could be a retro restaurant, or it could be a themed restaurant where you have a till from the 80s because it's an 80s themed restaurant, or whatever it's going to be. But it doesn't lean into that. So the fact that I think the only time you get any slight whiff of when you've got Stanley doing the stuff on the computer, because computers are such an unknown to most people in that restaurant. However, if you were to make it now, you make the tasks that you make what he's doing the same, except he's hacking into some corporate network rather than he can just go online and do it. He's got to get past a server. The jokes are the same. The setup is the same. It's just a different machine and different set of terminology, but it doesn't date it. No, you never see them using the tills. I think the only thing that does date it is that Samantha Janice gets a call on the office phone and has to go into the office to take a call rather than be on a mobile. So that type of thing, yes, okay, it sits awkwardly, but actually it's not unheard of. And you know, even when I started my first job in the late 90s, it was a case of, well, you know, not everyone had mobiles, and even if you did, you didn't have it on the shop floor, would you?
Well, no, so you might have to
go and take a call in the office. So even that, you think, well, no. Somebody watching it now, put it in front of the kids now, they'd be going, what the fuck is that? What, no. Why should you go to the office to answer the phone? Why can't you just take it out of her pocket? Why are they ringing work to speak? So that might not sit, because it's, again, it's that lack of lived experience. Mm. But because it's not reliant on it, you can go, well, yeah, that's just how things work.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it washed totally over me. Now you're saying it, I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, she was on the phone in the office and stuff. And like, yeah, I noticed the computer looked quite dated, but even that didn't bother me that much because you're right. Like, you still get the computer guy in the office. Even now, when most companies have got entire IT departments, there's still the computer guy. Like, you've still got fucking Neo, basically.
Yes.
Like, everybody's got one, right? But it's also... I just think, as we said, the universality of those young adults just needing to make ends meet and taking a shitty low-paid job. The universality of having the immediate line manager above them was really not been in the game for much longer than they have, and has just worked his way up the ladder slightly in his middle management, and then him getting the shit from the top. All of that tracks. But then also, key, I think, to not dating it, and we mentioned this when we've talked about other shows as well, is that none of the humour relies on pop culture references.
Yes.
And that is absolutely key. Because once you start throwing in pop culture references, you date yourself immediately. The only time I went about the time this was made, and even this is, you could still get away with today, when they're talking about getting money to go for a gig, and they're like, oh, what, Rolling Stones, is it? As though the Stones are the biggest band in the world, right?
Yeah.
Now, look, they're the fucking Rolling Stones, and they're still the Rolling Stones, so you can still get away with that gig. Yes. But, you know, would a bunch of teenagers be talking about the Rolling Stones today? Probably not.
No, probably not.
You know,
but
so,
then again, I'm fairly sure we paid a fuck ton of money to go and see them 20 years ago. So, you know.
Well, see, now you'd think we did. I had this discussion the other day, right?
It wasn't actually that much.
That is still the most expensive gig ticket I have ever bought, because my wife fucked up the tickets. I told her to get like £69 tickets and she got £96 tickets. She must have been stood on her fucking head. They were the exact opposite way around, the numbers. But we were talking about this the other day. Now, we haven't been to a gig in about 5 years. We were working it out. Like, the last gig we went to was Elton John. So that was like 5 years ago. It was pre-pandemic. Yeah. Right. But in that time, like, your expensive gig ticket has gone up from like 60-70 quid to like into the hundreds, and your average gig ticket is now sitting at like 70-80-90 quid. So
I've got tickets for a gig next week, and I got the cheapest ticket I could, and it was 57 quid.
Ouch.
And the it's in the stadium, so it's a big gig. The top end tickets were about 400 quid. And that's not like the VIP hospitality ones. That's just the good ones. And then you get the hospitality package on top of that. I mean, I know that the Taylor Swift concert that's on in Cardiff tonight, that the VIP tickets started at $1,000. And they're being sold on fucking eBay for about $8,000 or $9,000.
It's madness.
And it's a 3-hour show. How can you justify spending that for one ticket as well? So if you want to buy two or three tickets, you're talking a fucking half of your salary.
I mean,
just for a fucking 3-hour gig.
Like you saying you spent 60 quid on a gig ticket. Like, I can remember spending 65 quid for literally an all day, one day festival in Wembley. Like, and that was all day. That was like, doors were at midday and the gig went on till like 11 o'clock at night. And now you're paying that for like 3-4 hours. Let's be honest, you're paying that for about 2 hours because it was fucking watching the support, right? So,
yeah, exactly.
So anyway, way off topic. I'm a proper old man rant. But that was the only time this show really made me go, ooh. And like I say, to me, actually, that's a gig I would go to. But I just thought teenagers today wouldn't be. If they'd have just invented a band and thrown a band name in there, any fucking band, you know, just put their poster up on the wall behind them, even.
Yeah, because the band wasn't important anyway, because the gag was the fact he wasn't going to see a band. He was going to see a recital of Mozart.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was the joke anyway, so it could have been anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the type of thing that dates your show. And other than that one occasion, this doesn't really do that.
Else.
The prices date it a little bit as well, but again, I can go over that. Sometimes with the till, like, there was a point on one of the ones I was watching earlier where he rang up like a double cheeseburger or something. He said that's £1.60. I was like, fucking hell.
You're going to get the bread for that.
No, like that's not even fries now. Like it's not even a Coke, you know. But yeah, this was the early 90s.
Yeah, that's the type of thing that if you were making it now, you put the prices in for now, and in 35 years, people are going, you pay fucking £3 for a Coke. No, you pay 10.
Yeah,
it's just what it is, isn't it?
Or you just don't have the price in there. You just there's no need for that line at all.
Well, especially because like nobody's using cards or anything. It's a case of here's your food, and you hand them the cash, and that's it. You don't need to even do that. You don't need to mention it. So
no, but yeah, in general, I didn't feel like it dated at all. I'm thoroughly enjoying watching it because it feels like something I could watch on TV now. Like it feels like they could launch this as a show next week and I'd start watching it. Oh, this is all right. And I would just, like, it's never going to be my favorite show, but I'm definitely in for the long run.
It's good enough. And so, you know, they're 24 minutes each. And yeah, you put it on and you think, well, I don't have to know. I've not got to concentrate on it. It's not overly thinky. It's not trying to be so verbose that it's clever and it's, you know, and it's the way it's set out. It's just it's 25 minutes of fuckery.
Yep.
But it works. And as I watched the last couple of days, I've worked from home. No, I was in the office yesterday. I was on my own because the guy sharing office was on leave. So I had it on the laptop. It's not offensive. It's not distracting. I could just put it on. I could take it all in. And I'm still doing other stuff as well. And like today, I've had a couple on today while I've been working at home. And yeah, it's just one of those. I could sit here and quite easily do the other 22 episodes or whatever it is I haven't watched, and I'm not worried and think of it of a dip in quality or anything like that, because what I've seen so far, I'm quite happy to go, yeah, it's all right. It's not winning anything. It's not, nobody's coming out of this going, oh, that's the best actor, the best writing I've ever seen, and that it's competent and it's entertaining. That's what you want at the end of the day. It's an entertainment show.
Yeah, totally. It's a light entertainment show, and it's a very fucking good one. I'll be honest. I really enjoyed it because I'm still watching it. I really am enjoying it, and I will continue watching it. I'm definitely doing the whole run. And like I say, if somebody decides to all of a sudden drop this as a box set on some sort of retro collection, I'll spunk up the money for it. No problem whatsoever. It's worth every penny. It's just that actually this is another one of those ones that I cannot pay money for, even though I would like to.
I've not seen anything about a home release anywhere.
No.
Yeah, so it's, there's nothing. It's not popped up anywhere. So there's no, I apologize. As part of the old school weekend in 2013, CITV aired the third episode of season 3 as part of a celebration. That's the only time it's ever been repeated, and it's the only time it's ever come up since it finished airing in 1992. So yeah, nothing has ever happened with this. It's never been re-released. It's never been, that's it. No, it's literally just gone, oh, well, that's it. It's done now.
Yeah. Which is a crying shame. Like this does not deserve to be lost to the annals of history. There are far, far worse shows that have been preserved and are readily available.
And we've watched a lot of them.
We have watched a lot of them. This is sitting in the top percentile of stuff that we've watched, I'll be honest.
Oh, God, yeah.
This is definitely sitting in the top percentile.
There's not much I've come away going, right, I've watched 3 hours of it. I want to watch more. A lot of the times, right, I've watched 3 hours of it.
That's enough.
Yeah. If I see it, I won't turn it off, but I don't need to go and actively look for it.
Yeah.
Unless it's a show with a continuing narrative, when once I've started, I can't not watch the end of it. It's a curse. It cost me a fucking fortune when I was younger buying box sets and stuff like that. It takes a hell of a lot of time now because once I've started, I've got to finish. But I'm looking at this going, yeah, it's only another 20 episodes. Why not?
It's like 10 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
So yeah, I was very impressed. I was expecting it to be one of those where I couldn't call out details. I couldn't remember character names and I couldn't remember particular storylines, anything like that. But it's always been one of those I remember really liking. So when it came up, I was thinking, oh, shit, this is going to be a slog, and I'm going to be really disappointed. I have to neg on it for a couple of hours because it's going to be really shit.
Yeah, me too.
And actually, I had a completely opposite experience, which I'm really glad of.
Yeah, me too. I was feeling the same way. I was expecting, particularly because I knew it was a sitcom, and a lot of these kids' sitcoms are really cringeworthy when we go back and watch them. Because it, just because they're not treating the audience with respect. But this does. I think the only thing, if I had to pick fault with it, the only thing I really dislike, and I mean really dislike, is that fucking theme tune. It's appalling. And it's not the fucking fact that it's a little jazzy ragtime number, because that's right up my street. It's the horrible MIDI brass that comes in halfway through. The piano bit is fine. It's when we get that disgusting MIDI brass.
Fine. It's I mean, but it's one of those, again, it's every now and again, it's like the fucking Trident gum advert in Inside Out. It's just, it'll come into my brain and it'll be there for an hour and it'll disappear for fucking months and I won't think about it again. But it'll just pop in, I'll see the guy doing a little fucking tap dance on the burger and it'll disappear again for fucking ages.
Yeah.
It's not good, I say, but it is a proper earworm. And I found myself today, as I've been watching it, just humming along with it as it's coming on. So, I mean, it's not good. That's probably the worst thing about it.
Hard pass on the theme for me. But everything else, fucking great. Great. Can't wait to watch more of it, genuinely. It's a shame we've got to move on to the next thing. And definitely. I've now got to find time for this in my schedule. Because we have got to move. Well, thankfully, the next thing, the episodes are very, very short. So that should be easy. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. But that's always the unfortunate part with this. We find stuff, we go, oh yeah, I really want to watch the rest of that. And then we've got between this, Who Wins, and Mario, we just finding the time to actually sit down and do it. Mm. But I mean, as I've discovered the last couple of days, I can quite happily do this while I'm working. So it might just be a case of sort of sticking them on while I'm not sat next to anybody in the office, because it might be a little bit distracting. But certainly while I'm on my own this week, it might be quite good to just say, right, yeah, I can get a couple of these in a day and still get stuff done.
Sorry. I don't know what happened, but I knew you said when you were working, right? But for whatever reason, your mic just cut out. So you went, I can watch them when I'm... right? And then your mouth... I knew you said working, but on camera, it did not look like you said working. And then you carried on going about, it doesn't matter if people are watching, if I'm in the office on my own, and it just got more and more surreal. So I think it's probably time.
No, I do definitely work in the office. I don't do anything else in the office. I definitely work.
Definitely time to draw a line under this episode before the mic starts cutting out any more, because that's finished me as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I've got too much left to say anyway, to be honest. I had a really good time watching this. It was one of those I wasn't expecting to enjoy as much as I did, because I was worried it was going to have aged. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've just come away from going, I want to watch the rest of it. You know, there's still twice as much as I've already watched left to go, but I don't mind that. I'm quite happy with that, so I'm quite happy to pick it up. I mean, I'd love to know what other people remember. I mean, we talked at the start of the show about, you know, our respective other halves going, oh, I remember this. And the fucking general lack of interest we generally get, and we normally get. So the fact that there's some sort of positive response. I'd love to know what people think. So as always, listeners, please get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod. You can go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can also get our previous episodes and other shows as well. Wherever you get your podcasts from, subscribe, leave a message, we'll be back to us if we can. Until next time.
See you later.